Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started shortly. So grab your coffee, grab a seat. And if you're online and you haven't introduced yourself, please go ahead, introduce yourself and name an organization, and we can get started. Welcome for the 7th MPEP seminar.
Friendship has been a leader in our agency in terms of bringing a systems approach to the kind of work we do. And I just wanted to start with talking about what I see as some of the challenges for us and our agency. I think that what we have been doing is we've had a number of presentations in this room. In fact, Eric is here from IFC, and he the work that Cedars has been doing in the area of health systems, also very interesting. We've had a number of presentations on market systems, and our practitioners that MPEP associates with have been working in what they feel are systems for a long time. And so I think that a key challenge is taking the systems theory and making it practical, bringing it down to implementation. And I remember when I heard the Cedars presentation, I thought, that is really interesting. I don't understand it, but it really did impress me. So how do we take this very theoretical thinking? And sometimes it seems very academic. How do we make it very practical? I think that also asking, you know, making sure that systems thinking and systems approaches are not a solution looking for a problem, but we really make it clear why it's important, and how it's important. And I would argue, and I think probably if you're here, you would argue the same, that we think that systems thinking can bring a lot to our programming and by improving the results that we get from what we do. Because I think most of us feel we've been working in systems for forever. We live in systems. And that we've just sort of ignored the complexity of it and the implications of that complexity. And finally, I wanted to say that I think that we, to bring it down to some practical level, I think we need to think about how systems thinking affects the design of activities that we do, how it affects how we implement on the ground, and how it affects how we monitor and evaluate our results. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Chip.
Well, good morning, everybody, both here in person and online. It's really a pleasure to be here this morning and talk to you a little bit about the work that we've been doing, particularly around the release of a draft paper, which I hope you've all had a chance to look at, this paper on local systems, a framework for supporting sustained development. If you weren't aware, you can get a copy of it through a link on the event webpage. What I really want to do today is to hear as much from you as you from me. I really do think that we have an opportunity here to really make some important progress on embedding systems thinking in the agency, and I want to. You know, I've been working on this for quite some time, as Gene has alluded to, but I really see this as a really golden opportunity to make some significant progress. I'm going to tell you why in a few minutes, but I just want to get the benefit from all of your experience and expertise about how we can make best use of this sort of window of opportunity, because these things don't come along all that often. But before we sort of open it up and have a conversation about that, I think that I need to do two things to sort of help set the stage. One of them is that I need to flesh out a little bit about the context that we're working on in this on this topic within the agency, and that includes what's in this paper. And so, you know, what I'm looking for in part is, you know, once you sort of understand this, is how can we strengthen this, you know, how can we. The comments can also include how can we strengthen the paper itself to make sure that we have the strongest possible platform in order to move this agenda forward. And the second thing I'm going to do a little bit is to give you at least my own personal perspective on what I think we need to do in terms of how to think about systems, given some of the contextual issues, and to sort of help make it clear about what's sort of the official line and then what's my own thinking, that you'll see as we go through the slides a bit of a convention. If the slides have got white backgrounds, that means that this is sort of essentially what's in the paper right now. This is sort of more or less official thinking on it. If it's got a gray background, then it's all about, this is all my views. So, what I'd like to do to start with is to talk a little bit about the origins of this paper, because that's, in fact, an important piece of the context. And for some of you, this may be a little bit new. Others, I think, may be a little old hat. So, essentially, the paper grew out of a desire in the agency to explicitly address two issues. One of them is the aid effectiveness agenda. As many of you may know, about 2 years ago, the world gathered in Busan in South Korea to talk about aid effectiveness. This was the fourth in a series of conversations about it. Most famously, one of the early ones in Paris released the Paris Declaration of Principles around Aid Effectiveness. One of those principles was an explicit agreement on the part of both developing countries and those who are supporting them to promote the use of country systems. And initially, the definition of country systems meant essentially they were using the word system as a synonym for process. So in other words, it was government processes, primarily public financial management processes. So the idea, the vision was donor countries would give increasing amounts of funding directly to governments, and they would use their own budget priority setting processes and budget execution processes and internal audit procedures and so forth to essentially manage those results to achieve development objectives. Obviously, one of the underlying rationales for doing this was in part because of this commitment to sort of saying that countries better understand their own situation better than outsiders do, but also that this, essentially using and strengthening and using these country systems was essentially a necessary step towards the sustainability of these processes. Now, as time has gone on in the 8 years since that Paris Declaration was issued, there has been some rethinking about this, and most notably at Busan was a very clear sort of adjustment in the basic orientation to become more inclusive. And by inclusive, what they meant was that ownership meant more than just simply ownership by the government. It needed to be, if you will, more of a whole of society ownership. And similarly, this issue around systems really needed to be thought of is a broader set of relationships that exist not only within government but between government and other parts of society. So that was sort of the vision that was sort of put out there in Busan. I'm happy to say that the U.S. government, both USAID and the State Department, were very sort of essential parts of pushing this inclusivity emphasis at Busan. But part of the challenge is that after the document was produced, it sort of has raised questions about sort of saying, okay, how do we move that agenda forward? And actually, even though it's been 2 years, very few donors have actually put out statements about how they really are going to embrace that inclusive part of the Busan agenda. So in some sense, since we had been pushing for this, we felt it was really important to take full advantage of this opening and this emphasis on inclusivity and write something that said, this is how USAID understands the Busan agenda, and this is how we're going to carry it out. Again, I just want to stress the emphasis here on sustainability. The other piece of it, a little bit closer to home, had to do with USAID Forward, which is probably most of you know, were a set of reforms that the current administrator, Dr. Rajiv Shah, initiated when he assumed that position in 2010. And again, part of the emphasis there is about improving USAID's ability to support sustainability. And part of it includes improvements in the way that we plan and execute our programs, but part of it also is a renewed emphasis on providing funds directly to local actors, whether they are local governments or local civil society or local private sector. But it is sort of an understanding that that particular kind of direct support, or what we've come to call localized aid, is a necessary element in the toolbox along with other things that we have done. However, we didn't really ever come up with a very good sort of well-grounded argument about why it was important for us to include more localized aid in this process. And so, again, we may be a little late in this, but we felt it was important for us to also have a statement about how that particular kind of approach felt fit into a larger agenda to support sustainability and, again, the Paris and the Busan agenda. However, I mean, one of the things as we began to work on this, you will notice, is that was the word country and then the word system. And as I said, initially it was not really used in the real sense of system as a real sort of systemic kind of a concept. It was a synonym for processes. But there were some of us who thought, well, we have an opening here. We can make more out of this word system and really turn it into something meaningful. And that was really the other thing. Oops, excuse me. So it was a little bit of a stealth effort to include this idea of saying we have this word system. Let's make the most of it. The other thing, as you'll notice, is that we've also chosen to make a shift away from the sort of conventional terminology in this arena of country system and focusing on local system. And part of the reason for doing that was because the term country system has basically been captured by this idea that this is really only about governments. And we felt that rather than simply hyphenate it with inclusive country systems or some other locution which wasn't going to work very well, we thought this word local systems, although it itself in and of itself has problems about what you really mean by local in this case, we thought was a better term. Now, what are we hoping that we're going to get out of embracing system in a more systemic way here? I mean, I think one of the real arguments is that we really believe that it is the system that is really needs to be the focus of our sustainability efforts. We have had sustainability and USAID documents for quite some time, but one of the big arguments is, what exactly are you trying to sustain? You know, is it the outputs? No. Is it the organizations? No. So we need something to talk about what we are sustaining. And in this case, we felt that shifting the focus to a system, whether it's a market system or a service delivery system, that is really what it is that we're trying to sustain. And I think that that's a helpful addition and clarifying move. The other thing I think that we really wanted to emphasize, and that this is implicit in this idea of inclusivity, is the fact that none of these things that we care about, whether it's improved healthcare, improvements in the environment, if it's improvements in maternal and child health, agriculture, none of these things happen by the actions of one organization or one government or alone. These things generally are co-produced. They require the actions of lots of different actors working sometimes in competition, sometimes cooperatively with one another in order to produce these results. And so how do you capture this idea of co-production? Well, I think this idea of systems is a useful mechanism to really emphasize that is, in fact, what's going on. And then the last, another, I think, important part of this is that, at least in many systems thinking constructs, is this idea of dynamism and adaptability. And one of the things I think that we really felt was important was to make sure that we were embracing a concept that really embraced adaptation and resilience as a sort of a core element. Because sustainability doesn't mean building it once and hoping that it persists. It's about creating a capability that has self-adjusting properties to it so that as the environment changes, you can, in fact, have changes in the system itself. That's an essential part for sustainability. So in that sense, we felt that trying to bring in some systems thinking into the way that we were talking about this was an important was going to give us some important leverage over the problem. So in that sense, what the paper tries to do is to address all of these things, the aid effectiveness agenda, USAID Forward, as well as the systems thinking. So when we talk a little bit more about systems, and now you notice it's gray, I think that oftentimes when people come to this term of systems thinking, this is what they think of or something like it. In other words, it's a systems diagram. And one of the things I think we've tried efforts at USAID, we have tried to introduce ideas of systems diagrams, we have done training around it, and the reaction is usually, this is cool, but when they try to do it, this is hard. And so they get turned off. And frankly, I think I've come to the realization is that what we're talking about here is not about a specific tool. We're not trying to say that the way forward is we need to turn everybody into a systems mapper. That's not what the point is. And in this, this evolution of my own thinking about this, I really have to credit Bob Williams. I don't know how many of you know Bob Williams, but he has been he comes out of the evaluation field. He's based in New Zealand and has written a number of books on both evaluation and then also on systems thinking. I have a particular citation to a particularly good book, which I will get to in two slides. But this is sort of the way that he also talks about it. So it's really not about this issue about a particular specific tool. What he points out, and he sort of pointed me in this direction, believe it or not, there have been people out there for quite some time going out and mapping all of the various sort of antecedents to various types of systems thinking, and you end up with this, explosion of lines like this. All the point being is that there are lots of different kinds of systems thinking. There are lots of ways at it. He actually has a little circle up in the corner that talks about the kind of approach that he has. So the point is that we could spend an awful lot of time arguing about whether my tool is better than your tool and whether yours is right or wrong, and I just think that that's probably not a very helpful way to go. What he suggests and what I sort of have bought into is the idea that it's really about how to start thinking systemically. And to do that, what he suggests is that this idea of system is, to remember that this is really just simply a human construct, an idea that we impose on the world to help make better sense of it. And therefore, in that sense, there really isn't a tangible system that you can point to out there. It's really an idea that we carry around in our head, and that the value of it is in terms of does it help us make sense of some very complicated and messy situations. And one of the things that he offers is that thinking systemically, again, can embrace all sorts of different tools that can help you make sense, but that these three ideas that he has here, and talking about that would be a seminar in itself, boundaries, interrelationship, and perspectives, are essentially key elements. And he makes the argument, and I don't know whether, I don't know if he's been able to sort of establish it, that if you go back to that messy picture, that actually one thing that they all do share is that one way or the other, they are concerned with these three topics. But it's essentially a way of trying to make sense of what is going on out there. It's a construct. And that it embraces a variety of different tools. And then the other thing that he argues for is beyond thinking systemically is about how to be systemic. And he, in this chapter that I've cited here, he comes up with a couple of ideas. One of the things that I took away from it, though, is that there's a fair amount of overlap between the six ideas that he has here and the principles that we identify in the paper. So in that sense, what I would argue is that what the paper is really arguing for is less about the choice of one particular tool or another. It's about how can we better embed both the thinking and the being systemic into the corporate culture and operations of USAID, and through us, through our various partners. So back to the paper. So what the paper actually talks about in terms of moving forward on this local systems agenda, and how, you know, beyond making the connection to sustainability, it sort of looks at these four areas of attention that we need to look at. And I'll just go through them. I'm going to go through them, although I'm going to spend a bit more time on the first one. So the first one is essentially this idea of understanding these systems. And again, this goes in part to assessment. It goes to this question about maybe tools that we would use to try to understand what's going on, although it does indeed talk about mapping, but I want to be clear that mapping in this way is not what we mean by necessarily going out and doing a systems diagram. It means essentially coming up with some sense of who are the actors that are involved in it and what are the critical interrelationships that exist between them. Now, one of the things that the paper puts forward as a way of so first of all, again, that it's just important to reiterate that what we're talking about here is a constellation of actors. They may be governments, they may not be, they may be private sector, they may be civil society, they may be individuals, they may be advocacy organizations. There are any number of different kinds of actors that may be involved here. Now, one of the things that the paper puts forward, albeit rather briefly, is a way of understanding these systems is by examining them in terms of these five R's: resources, roles, relationships, rules, and results. And talk a little bit more about that. So essentially, the way in which we came up with this was, if you go back to a very simple open system diagram, normally it has basically a couple of basic parts. One of them is that this is an open system, that it's a mechanism that transforms inputs into outputs. Now, what we've done is, and there's an interaction, however, with environment and a feedback capability. So the purple is the feedback into the system, interacting with an environment. And rather than talk about inputs and outputs, we've just tried to change them into terms that meant more in our own language. So resources, I think, is easier for us to understand what we're talking about in the development context, and we have, rather than outputs and outcomes, those are really sort of the results that we care about. Another aspect of this has to do with rules, and rules, I think, we feel are really very important. Rules, in this sense, are important for essentially how our resources translated into and affect what goes on in this transformation process and in the transformation into results. And then we have a set of actors who are assuming various kinds of roles. And again, although there could be a lot more, I've got three colors up here to represent three different kinds of roles that may be played in a system. And lastly, we have the relationships that exist between them. And again, there are three different kinds of relationships identified here, but by all means, it could be all sorts of different kinds of relationships that matter. So what we're talking about then is essentially a transformation process that involves roles and relationships, engagements of various kinds of actors. We have rules that are important for determining how resources are deployed, how roles are defined, how relationships what's allowable and not allowable in terms of relationships, and ultimately influencing results. So that's basically a little bit about what the five R's are. If you have reactions to whether or not you think this is useful, that would also be helpful. The last thing that we have said, though, is that one of the important moves that we need to make, and this relates to the fourth point here, has to do with how we understand results. We have tended in our agency to focus results on both ones that are relatively short-term and that are quantified. And they're basically the outputs of a process. And one of the things that we've said is really important to do is that we really need to expand our definition of what a result is. That we need to be interested in the system itself that produces those results and develop ways to measure whether or not the system itself is getting stronger, more resilient, more durable or not. So it is a shift in the way in which it's not that we want to move away from our focus on what are we accomplishing in terms of outputs and outcomes, but rather that we need to expand what we include as a result. So another aspect that goes back to the paper itself talks about the process of projects and project design. Already, I think we're sort of pushing beyond where the paper is on the basis of some of the comments to suggest that it really isn't about design as a discrete activity, but rather design as a process. And that begins even before you put pen to paper in terms of how do you begin to engage with that system, understand what its boundaries are, understand what the perceptions are of various actors within it, what their desires are, and then tries to encapsulate that in a design and then extends on beyond that in terms of an ongoing engagement with the system through monitoring to maintain whether or not the various interventions are actually having the desired effects. And so there really needs to be this sort of ongoing and fairly continuous engagement with the system. Incidentally, as I mentioned, the paper has a series of principles, 10 of them. The first four of them really relate very much to the understanding of the system. The second six to the principles. The second six principles to this design process. The third part of it, and this may seem a little bit sort of out of kilter with this, but is this question around risk. And part of the reason that this is really important has been because. By virtue of our renewed interest in providing funding directly to local local actors, it has sort of raised up this question about the reliability of their financial systems and so forth. But so an increased attention to financial or fiduciary risks. But as we have been doing that, we sort of said, well, you know, really, there are lots of other kinds of risks we need to be paying attention to. And if we're going to pay additional attention to fiduciary risks, let's talk about these other kinds, and let's do it in a comprehensive manner so that we're not only concerned about fiduciary risks, but we also understand, as we think about engagements, what is that likely to do about, say, programmatic risk, which is the risk that the intervention is actually not going to accomplish what it is we expect it to do. So what we're arguing for is sort of essentially two things. We need to sort of take our various efforts at assessing different kinds of risks and bring them together in a kind of a comprehensive single examination. And the second thing that we're doing is that we need to have a bit more of a balanced discussion about what is it, you know, balancing risk and reward. So in other words, in the private sector, it's not about minimizing all risks. It's sort of saying we're willing to assume some level of risk because we anticipated a substantially improved reward. We're not talking about turning USAID into venture capitalists, but what we are talking about is sort of having a better understanding of what do we expect to be able to accomplish. And obviously, the sustainability of these results is a really important thing to be shooting for because that's the way in which we actually get the most sort of greatest effect over the longest period of time. And the last one, which I've already basically alluded to, is this question about monitoring and evaluating for sustainability. So part of it is this issue that I raised before about expanding our definition of results and then developing indicators. And those can be both quantitative or qualitative about how do we understand the system and its health. You know, how do we measure whether, in fact, we are collectively making progress in terms of improving the functioning of a system and the nature of those roles and relationships? And I think that that's an important shift. We have been focusing, you know, we've done a lot of emphasis on sort of assessing individual capacity development. We've talked more about organizational capacity, but what we're really talking about here is system capacity. And then the last piece of it is how do we, you know, it's really sort of measuring whether we really are sustaining these results. And maybe you have got other ways of doing it, but the one we came up with was moving more in the direction of ex post evaluations. So that basically means going back to a project 3 to 5 years after its conclusion and seeing what happened, seeing whether, in fact, the results that we, you know, that we were expecting have persisted over time. But I think one of the other things we also expect is that sometimes the greatest effects were not necessarily the planned ones, and so there may be other kinds of results that may be important to capture about it. So to understand that process, but also we hope that if we, the part of the other part of it is sort of the proof of the pudding, that if we are able to engage more and more in these systems over time, we would expect that our performance in terms of sustainability would improve over time. Now, unfortunately, it's going to take us quite a while before we start seeing the results of that process. But even now, I think we've made a commitment in calendar 14 to start the first round of these ex post evaluations. And so we will be at least establishing a bit of a baseline as we move forward. So I'm almost done. So essentially, what I've tried to lay out is both what's in the paper, sort of the foundation that we're working for, some of my own orientations, and I just, before we open it up and sort of say how do we make the most of this, I wanted to sort of pick up on a point that Gene made at the end, which is that as we do this, we have to be a little bit aware of the challenges that we're facing with our own agency and with those that we work with on this topic. I mean, I think that one of the things I certainly agree with about Genon is the fact that our agency has a relatively low tolerance for abstraction and is very much practically oriented. So the question then is, how do we move in this direction? Now, the way in which this usually manifests itself is somebody comes up with an interesting idea and they say, where's the template? Well, the fact of the matter is that moving in the direction of templates, it seems to me, is antithetical to what it is that we're talking about. So the question is, how do we make this practical but encourage the kind of thoughtfulness and reflection and engagement that essentially is necessary for doing this? The second part of it is that we have a relatively limited number of sort of committed, you know, people who are already sort of committed to sort of pushing the systems agenda. We have a listserv within the agency. You know, we've got 10,000 people around the world. The listserv has got 60 names on it. So it's a start, but it's not a huge number to begin with. Another issue is that clearly, you know, we're talking about a change management strategy. I don't think anybody would disagree that this is going to take some time. But unfortunately, the nature of the cycles, both within the bureaucracy that we have, you know, changing from administration to administration, changing from priority to priority as time goes on, means that sometimes our time horizons are pretty short. So how do we try to sustain something like this over time? Another issue that we face right now at the moment, mentioned USAID Forward. With USAID Forward has come a raft of new policies and procedures that are being all pushed out to the field, and the reaction that we have gotten in stereo from the field is enough is enough. We're exhausted with all of these changes. We're trying to do the best we can to make to carry forward on the ones that have come out already. Piling more on at this point just makes it more and more complicated, and we, you know, what's our attention span to these new things? Not to mention questions about limited training resources, and then finally, question around incentives. You know, how do we, as we mentioned, we operate in an environment that privileges results in the short term that tend to be quantitative. How do we, if that's the focus of all along the line, how do we begin to shift that to allow a focus more on results that are probably not going to be visible for quite some time and may not necessarily be captured in quantitative methods? So at this point, I'd just like to end in my part of it and then open it up. But again, what I'm really looking for, by all means, any questions are fair game, but what I'm really most looking for is any thoughts you may have about how we can make the most of this opportunity. Because I really do think that this is not only is this, I think, the first time that USAID has gone on record in terms of making sort of this firm a statement about sustainability, but it making this clear connection between systems and sustainability. And I think that this really is a great opportunity, and I want to make the most of it.